As we look at the turmoil on the markets, and this morning, while it's expected that there will be some selling at the opening based on the futures, the markets rallied yesterday, looking at the Federal Reserve's report that interest rates will stay close to zero, the prime rates that the banks charge each other will stay close to zero for at least 2 years, a signal that the U.S. economy is weak and is likely to remain so through the 2012 election. But China got some unexpectedly good news. And again, it was more bad news for the United States. Its trade surplus significantly higher than had been thought, although imports to China from the United States are actually improving. And China's relationship with the United States actually growing. Yet, are there concerns in China about what's going on global markets, particularly in Washington, D.C., as the U.S. attempts to deal with its deficit problem? We decided to ask someone with a long historical perspective, both on China, the world of finance, and U.S. economics. Neil Ferguson joins us. He's the Lawrence A. Tisch Professor of History at Harvard University, author of The Ascent of Money, A Financial History of the World. His forthcoming book is Civilization, The West and the Rest. I gather you're getting some rest there in the East, huh, Neil?
Well, I wouldn't say so. I'm actually working on a television documentary series, so I'm feeling anything but rested as I sit here in a little village in the province of Anhui, far from the madding crowds of Beijing and Shanghai.
All right, joining us via Skype from Bishan, China, is Neil Ferguson. What do you think the Chinese make of what's going on in Washington? I gather that this very popular book in China, Currency Wars, is all about an alleged conspiracy to get Chinese savers to buy T-bills. There's a certain amount of gloating over America's apparent stumbling from its economic supremacy. What's the mood there?
Well, if you take the mood to be represented by the official news agency, gloating just about covers it. There was an extraordinarily strident response, not only to the deficit deal, but also to the downgrade by Standard & Poor's in Beijing. And the gist of it was that China has been warning the U.S. about its profligate ways for months, if not years, and now here's the proof, here's the vindication, and it's high time that the United States got its act together, because, of course, China, as its number one foreign creditor, expects nothing less than prompt repayment, and all this talk of default is completely unacceptable to Beijing.
You know, there's a real irony here. Leading up to this, one would have thought that the impetus was to increase liberalization and reform inside China, while the U.S. stood firm in its economic course. And now exactly the opposite has occurred. The U.S. is sort of forced by external circumstances to take much more radical action on the deficit, while it's China that seems to be slowing its liberalization. What do you make of that, Neil Ferguson?
It's a little hard to interpret because, on the one side, from the Chinese vantage point, the financial crisis proved that the West didn't really know what it was doing, and wrangles about deficits and austerity proved that democracy is a crazy system that China should never adopt. I mean, that's a very important part, at least, of the propaganda story. At the same time, the Chinese have had to engage in some pretty extraordinary stimulus spending of their own to maintain the economic momentum through the financial crisis. Remember, one of the biggest stories of 2008, 2009, and into 2010 was China's sustained and very high growth rate despite the crisis in the US and in Europe. Many people were surprised by that apparent decoupling. So what caused it? Well, the answer is that the Chinese really let rip with bank lending, and particularly lending to local authorities, but also to property developers. Now, I've been traveling the length and breadth of this country over the last 3 weeks. Everywhere I go, I am stunned by the sheer scale of investment in residential real estate. Tower blocks, and tower blocks as far as the eye can see. That is what has kept the Chinese economy going. Phenomenal rates of investment in residential real estate. Does that sound familiar? It does to me. And I begin to wonder if perhaps what I'm witnessing as I travel around here is a relatively a bubble-like development in Chinese real estate fueled by debt. So before the Chinese gloat too much at what has happened in the United States, I think they need to take a pretty long, hard look at how their economy is doing, because the boot could be on the other foot quite soon if they don't get things under control in what has clearly become a very overheated real estate market here.
And finally, you know, it's not only the Chinese who have a history of controlling their own economy. I'm reminded of almost exactly 40 years ago. And if you think about China, Nixon comes to mind for some certain reasons. But on August 15th, 1971, Richard Nixon, I want you to listen to this, Neil, gave a speech that started out as a pep talk.
The strength of a nation's currency is based on the strength of that nation's economy. And the American economy is by far the strongest in the world.
And that, you know, by itself could not have been any more reassuring than President Obama's speech earlier this week in the middle of the market turmoil. But then Nixon, 40 years ago, said this.
I am today ordering a freeze on all prices and wages throughout the United States for a period of 90 days.
A radical move 40 years ago by Richard Nixon, the old capitalist, actually did reassure markets. Do you see anything like that coming out of the West at this point, or are they just sort of at the mercy of circumstances?
Well, a big worry that's been expressed by, for example, Carmen Reinhart, my colleague Ken Rogoff's co-author, is that we might return to the financial repression that we saw in the Nixon years. Financial repression is a key phrase these days, and it's supposed to sum up all the different measures a government can take to restrict an economy in such a way as to finance its deficit by force, in effect compelling banks or private citizens to hold government debt at inflated prices. Remember, the other thing that Nixon did 40 years ago was to break the link between the dollar and gold,
right,
finally, and to usher in the era of paper money. And I think one way of understanding the crisis of our time is that we're living through the end of that four-decade era of fiat currency. And it's a very painful end, I think, for the United States. And it's also a traumatic end from the vantage point of China, which has based its growth on a kind of strategy of currency manipulation, pegging its currency against the paper dollar. That, I think, is what we're living through now.
Well, the man with the long view tells it like it is, the 40-year epic ending, perhaps, in this market turmoil. Neil Ferguson, Lawrence A. Tisch Professor of History at Harvard University, author of The Ascent of Money, A Financial History of the World. You can get back to your documentary now, Neil. Thanks so much.
My thanks. Bye.
He joined us via Skype from Bishan, China. China, looking at the markets.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.